Chapter 18. Softness. Cold, yes? Azudana said when she crawled into the access tunnel to Zaknafane's bedside. Propped up in a sitting position, the weapon master didn't need to nod to confirm the obvious, for his smile showed chattering teeth. His shoulder and arm were wrapped in a giant ice pack bandage, and his bed itself was no more than a bit of padding cut into the glacial ice wall. "They will take you out soon," Azudana told him. "It's believed the cold may slow the progress of the phage, particularly when it is in an arm or a leg, and it allows the herbs to better battle it." Zack nodded. "The woman I fought," he chattered. "Did I infect her?" "Oh no, put your heart at ease. You cannot transfer the phage. Only the claw of a blue slod can do that." Zack nodded again and took a relaxed breath. "You fought well," the woman said. She moved a bit closer and turned sidelong, mirroring Zack's position. She lay on her side and propped her head up on an arm bent at the elbow, her thick mane of purple and white hair cascading down to the ice floor of the crawl space. "She surprised me with her strength," Zack managed to get out. And he finished with a shudder and a puff of frosty breath. "It almost ended before I knew it had begun." "We saw that. Alden Dwayne is no minor opponent. It is likely that she secured a rank among those we would elevate to Beyond Corso if we lose center guards. And yes, we all saw she almost had the match won. All she had to do was survive the fight, and she would have taken the victory, since your grape stains were..." "Are," he corrected, bringing his working arm to his red and purple stained shift. "Yet if you had not fallen to the phage, she would not have held out," Azudana said. Zack shrugged and shivered. "I do not say that in false flattery," she assured him. "As soon as you recovered your footing, you found her weakness and exploited it."
"She was too forward with her attacks," Zack said. "She lowered her offhand guard in trying to hit a bit harder." He smiled ruefully. "I'll admit, she hit hard."
"If you remain in Caladay, you will fight in Kazkalchi next year, I do not doubt. I hope that you will choose Shelobel as the borough of your home."
She paused and gave him a playful smile.
"Because I would not wish to have to beat you senseless."
Zack managed another wide smile, but winced in pain as he shifted. "Will I ever fight again?" he asked, as much to himself as to his guest. He looked to Azudana as he finished, though, his eyes redirecting the question to her. She wasn't smiling. She was trying to smile, but she wasn't smiling. The companions were housed in a large, low structure near the crossroads of Shelobel. This was the only inn within the entire borough, typically used for visitors from the other three who didn't feel like hiking back after a visit. And occasionally, very occasionally, it was used for outsiders who had wandered into the glacial rift, or who would have been doomed had not the Avendrow gone out to rescue them from the unforgiving elements. The placard outside named the inn as Ibelsitato, a word Jarl Axel did not understand until he broke it down and rearranged a syllable. "It's just a welcome to visitors," he explained to Intrary and Catti Bree.
"No wonder, then, that you had trouble with it," Catti Bree quipped. "It's not something you would readily read in Menzo Berenzon."
"Not true. The dungeons of House Baenri have a similar greeting above the entry door," Intrary said. But they were not in the dark city of the Drow, and this was no dungeon. The place was more a common room, a tavern of sorts, than an inn, with just a few bedrooms set in the back. It didn't take long for the companions to realize that one of their newfound friends had eased the way for them here, for they were met with warm greetings by the curate bussing and waiting the tables, and the two Avendrow moving in and out of the kitchen with trays of food. The round-faced Eulutian chef, close behind and reminding her team repeatedly, "Dance and serve, food is the lust of life, remember." They were given a table near the middle of the room and felt the eyes of Caladaeans upon them as the establishment filled up around them. There were no harsh words aimed their way, though, and more than one of those gathering came up to them and offered well wishes for their afflicted friend. with assurances that the healers of Shellobel were very familiar with battling the Chaos Phage. Caddy Bree noticed that Jarl Axel was saying less and less to those who came over, and seemed to be looking inward more than outward, a quite unusual posture for the clever, detail-devouring rogue. She couldn't miss the look in his eyes, and how unusual it was to see both of his eyes, however, as he took in the sights and sounds of mirth about him. She understood that and felt it too. "Do you see the future here, Jarl Axel?" she asked after a while. "The future for me?" "For your people," the woman clarified. "Is this place a vision of your hopes for Menzo Berenzon? For Luskin, perhaps?" "I don't yet know what to make of it," he admitted. "I don't doubt the sincerity of our hosts, nor do I even fear that there is a more vicious underbelly to this place. Not much of one, at least. And that is more than I can say of almost any city I have ever visited." "It's not Menzo Berenzon," Entreri agreed. "But there are flashes of Caladay in Menzo Berenzon," Jarl Axel pointed out. "In the stench streets, mostly, where the influence of the matrons is minor. And where bodies are often found in alleyways," Entreri reminded him. "Ah, my friend, but that is the spillover from the political and familial rivalries, most often."
"Menzo Berenzon is a noxious place," Caddy Bree said. "I don't feel that here. And I don't believe that we are being deceived. Their smiles are real and grounded in joy."
"They play hard and drink harder," said Entreri, who was nursing a tremendous headache. "They dance, they love, and they sing with abandon."
"And they drink," Jarl Axel repeated with a knowing grin.
Entreri groaned and held his head.
"You enjoyed your time with Vessi?" Caddy Bree said with a laugh.
"Too much so, but yes. He took me to a place he called Delir. I did not know the drow could sweat so much." The other two looked at him curiously. "It was half a dance, half a fight to see who could stay on the floor the longest. Few left alone."
"Including Entreri?"
The man just shrugged and even seemed to blush a bit, which caught Caddy Bree off guard. "They're alive," Entreri went on. "Maybe more alive than any people I have known. They play harder than many fight." After a moment of quiet, Caddy Bree surprised her companions when she looked at Jarl Axel and asked,
"Are you ready to admit it yet?"
"Dear lady, whatever are you talking about?"
"But this, Caladay, is why we're really up here in the far north," Caddy Bree replied. "It wasn't about Dumweel, and certainly not about Cazadea. You brought us here because you knew of this place."
"I did not," Jarl Axel said somberly and evenly, fully without flair. "I did not know of it, but yes, I suspected its existence."
Caddy Bree sat back and sighed. Artemis Entreri locked his stare upon the rogue.
"On the same trip I took to visit the Moonwood, I met a very old elf in Silvery Moon, was known to spout wild stories of drow in the north at the top of the world."
"What a wonderful coincidence," Caddy Bree sarcastically remarked.
"It was no coincidence," Jarl Axel admitted. "I had heard of Freewindle before, and had already commissioned a lord of the region to look more deeply into the rumors, and also to arrange the visit with Sinifane. You see, it has always been about Dumweel as well. And yes, though it is a minor thing, about Cazadea. Finding Dumweel, if she is who I believe her to be, will prove no small thing in the coming trials of Menzo Berenzon. I knew she was in the north and had somehow, so it seemed, survived. I thought she might be here, if here even really existed."
Entreri snorted.
"What?" Jarl Axel bade him.
"I do not much like being used," he said. "Though I wonder why it even surprises me where you were concerned."
"You were not used and not deceived."
"It sounds like your words to the Inquisitors," Caddy Bree said.
"You remember, the ones that almost got us thrown from a cliff. I knew only whispers of such a place as Caladay from an elf nearing the end of his life, and seemingly more lost in fantasy than present in that which was truly around him," Jarl Axel said. "I didn't even know its name, and had no idea that it might be within a glacier, or that it would be anything like this."
"Except for the drow," said Caddy Bree.
"Yes,
and that they were not Lothians, that their society was neither cruel nor unjust. Quite the opposite, for if what Freewindel told me in his rambling tales of these drow is true, we have come upon a society that is egalitarian and moral, a place where you survive because you can rely on others, and where they survive because they know they can rely on you. Do you now understand what such a promise means to me, who had to survive Menzo Berenzon? To Zaknafane, who gave his very life simply so that his matron wouldn't murder her own son? And for no better reason than him denying the vile demands of the Spider Queen? So Zak knew, Entreri said. No, Jarlaxle sharply replied. I told no one but Dabne, who was with me in the East, and swore her to secrecy as well. Do you realize how great the disappointment would have been for Zak if Freewindel's tales were indeed rambling fantasies? I could not do that to him, or even to Camoriel, or Gromph. Gromph? Caddy Bree echoed incredulously. Gromph, Jarlaxle declared. Or any of the others, any of Bregan d'Erth, and most of those in Menzo Berenzon as well. I didn't tell you for the same reason Dabne wouldn't, because we understand the stakes here for those of us who escaped Menzo Berenzon and the Spider Queen. This, Kaladay, the Avendrow, all of it is something we dared not even hope. So no, I reject your anger and your claim that I deceived you, because this is, too, about Dumweel, for her sake, for the sake of her poor mother, and for the hope that we can do something to prevent or mitigate or at least make sure the correct side wins in the coming storm in Menzo Berenzon. That may not matter to you, but it matters to me, deeply. It doesn't matter to me, Entreri said. But he looked down as he did, not making eye contact, and Caddy Bree thought he had just wanted to say something, anything, to strike back for being deceived. It matters to me, Caddy Bree said to Jarlaxle. It matters to my husband, to my family. As she finished, she considered Drizzt's mood of late and silently added to herself, I think. That said, I add this warning. We don't really know what Kaladay is, she added.
We've seen them fight, Entreri interjected, looking up again, his expression deadly serious. You don't learn that in knitting circles or from painting pretty pictures. And in my night with Vessi, I saw them fight even more, weapon duels with blunted blades. If a score of Avendrow fought a score of Menzo Berenzon drow, the only bet I would take is that both would lose.
It's a harsh land, Caddy Bree reminded him.
Perhaps, Entreri replied. But it is my experience that those who fight so well fight often.
They are as they seem, Jarlaxle insisted. They play hard, they love free, they live for life itself. I saw this on the stench streets of Menzo Berenzon. For all my life, I thought that merely a response to the strict edicts of the matrons and Loth. But now I see that the ways of the stench streets were because the drow there, for all the pressures and threats upon them, were free. Entreri scoffed, but said nothing as a woman came over to the table then, carrying two drinks in each hand. Her hair was more blue than white, and her skin showed bluish shades amid the dusky gray of drow heritage. Her eyes, too, were blue, light blue, though, not the same deep hue as Caddy Bree's. Still, blue was an eye color none of the three had ever seen on a drow. She was dressed in a beautifully laced and revealing gown, trimmed with golden fur that seemed soft enough to fall into and never return. She placed down three of the mugs, which looked like glass, but were in fact made of ice, and were filled with a heady beer.
To new friends,
she toasted, lifting her own mug for a large swallow.
Billy B, she said after she had wiped her foamy lips,
and she indicated one of the Avendrow who was pushing a large cart.
He will come by with a fine assortment. Take what you will, but if you are very hungry, take the tagliog. It is the steak of the tail, full of fat.
She smacked her lips together and winked, and started away, but paused and turned back.
I spoke with Elena, she said seriously. You haven't done as she asked.
The three looked at the woman curiously.
Persimmons, the blue-eyed drow explained, with currant muskox cheese and shallow belly ice wine, of course. I have some coming for you shortly. You will thank me.
Another wink and she danced away.
I found the answer of the gods, Jarl Axel said. For surely I've died and gone to paradise.
This is a place where danger is all about, Caddy Bree said. They survive by counting on each other. Maybe that's the key to their love of life. I think you are right, Jarl Axel.
Joy, the rogue said. The love of life, and the appreciation that it is temporary.
He hoisted his ice mug, and Caddy Bree tapped it with her own.
I'm surprised there is such a word in your language, said Intrary.
But as to what you claim is the reason, he added to Caddy Bree, haven't you also described Menzo Berenzon? What joy do you find there, surrounded by danger?
The stench streets, Jarl Axel said again.
The murders, Intrary countered again.
The stench streets without the shadows of Lothen, said Caddy Bree. And to that, she and Jarl Axel lifted their icy mugs again. This time, after a grunt and a grumble, because he was, after all, Artemis Intrary. Intrary joined in. The tail steak was every bit as delicious as promised, and the trio were devouring large cuts when the blue-eyed woman returned.
You are a priestess, I am told, she said to Caddy Bree.
The woman nodded, her mouth full.
When magic returns, I will teach you how to create this, the drow promised.
What is your name? Jarl Axel asked.
Ah, I know yours and forgot to tell you my own. I am called Aida, but my real name is Aida Umtu.
I'd love to learn to make it, Caddy Bree said.
I'm amazed that this can be accomplished without killing an animal. It's a necessity, since there are so few animals around. Besides, we love our animals. Consider this. I share my house with two Muktef. I would no sooner skin them than I would skin, well, you. And I must admit, I do find the color of your skin quite beautiful.
Should I worry? Caddy Bree asked with a laugh.
No, but maybe he should, Aida answered.
And she poked Intrary's shoulder, then laughed and spun away.
So it is true as we were told. They have learned to shape their magic to replicate beautiful things,
Caddy Bree said when she was gone.
You really are in your paradise, Jarl Axel.
The look Jarl Axel returned in that moment truly gave the woman pause, for she had never seen such an expression on the face of the irascible rogue. He looked like he was about to cry.
Aida returned soon after with the promised persimmons. She pulled up a chair and joined the friends, and showed them how to properly eat the shellobelly delicacy with the perfect and necessary ratio of cheese to the fruit, with the wine chaser close at hand.
As I promised, came a voice when the four took their first bite and sip of wine, and they turned to find Elena, Emelian, Adinduin, and several others coming over to join them.
There is only one greater joy to be found in all of Caladay,
Aida said, and she cast a glance at Intrary.
And even that is a contested opinion.
Yes. Kazkalchi, Adinduin immediately countered. Kazkalchi. There is nothing to exceed Kazkalchi.
To Adinduin, then, said Emelian, lifting a mug. If she does not find an opportunity to get on the rink this festival, then may she find a full battle next sunset.
Adinduin, the others cheered.
Where is Vessi? Intrary asked, looking about to see if he was among the group.
He is in seclusion, of course. Biancorso will not be seen until their first battle under the Shimmering Night.
The Shimmering Night?
Filled mugs were brought to all, and the next toast roared throughout the common room.
Biancorso, Quista Canze!
Your head will hurt even more tomorrow, Caddy Bree warned Intrary,
as he put his mug back to the table and suppressed what clearly would have been a tremendous belch.
Worth it, he replied.
Caddy Bree sat back and joined in the toast. She still couldn't dismiss the fear that this was all a deception. But as the revelry wore on, she came to realize that her fear remained only because she truly didn't want it to be a ruse. Even aside from whatever danger such a deception might mean for her and her friends, she didn't want this to be anything other than what it seemed. For Jarl Axel, for Zachnefane, and more than that, for Drizzt. And most of all, for Bree.
I must say goodbye for now, Azudana told Zack. Zack spent a moment catching his breath, which was becoming increasingly difficult. He felt as if he had a feather in the back of his throat, one that constantly tickled him.
Where?
He managed to ask. I must go into seclusion with Biancorso before Kazkalji, the warrior explained. Sunset is only 3 days away. We must prepare. We must consider nothing but Kazkalji. Zack nodded and turned his head back to a neutral position, staring straight up at the ice. He thought of his son, and now believed he would never see Drizzt again. He thought of Catti Bree. Yes, he would have them bring her to his bedside. He owed her an apology for those early days, when he had first come back to life, when he hadn't quite been able to get beyond the prejudices that had been ingrained in him since the day of his birth. Even if, especially if, it was with his last breath, he wanted to tell her that one more time. He hoped for a better world for his granddaughter, and now, seeing this place, he dared to believe it could be so. But still, he could not die happy. He could not leave again now and accept it.
I will fight, he declared, though he really didn't even know what he was fighting.
He had no feeling in his shoulder or his arm, but that was mostly the ice, he figured. What was scaring him, though, was the creep of tingling numbness and the crackling lines that now covered half his chest and had crossed over to his other hip and down his right leg. I wish you would fight beside me in Kazkalji, Azudana said. Next year, yes. Zack heard the false optimism in her declaration, her exaggerated exuberance for his sake. She understood what he was facing here. He turned his head to regard her again and, despite his discomfort, was struck by the image. A fire burned in the room behind her, its light dancing into the deep alcove. She was on all fours, the tunnel being too low to stand in, and was shifted just a bit to the side, her head bent that way, her smile wide. Too wide for the fears that were in her heart, Zack knew. But he couldn't help but appreciate her effort here. Her long hair bundled on her shoulder and rained down from there like a sparkling waterfall, the flickers of firelight flashing between the strands with her every movement. There was something about her in this moment, in this light, a softness that struck Zack profoundly, and it took him a moment to understand why. He had never seen a drow woman this gentle, this emotionally open, this giving. The closest had been Dabne, and his scattering thoughts began to summon those tender memories with the priestess. He began to lose himself in that past. Azudana lifted her hand from the floor, holding something, and Zack was brought back to the present. His shirt? This was yours, yes? She asked. He managed a slight nod. May I tear it? The question confused him. A strip of it, she explained. I wish to wear it about my wrist in the battle. I will be Zaknafane's champion if he will allow. Zack nodded. She gave a tug, creating only a minor tear.
Mithril,
Zack whispered as the woman inspected the garment and noted the light metal inside the fabric layers. She smiled and separated enough to rip a piece off the tail of the shirt. She looped it about her right wrist, rolled it under into a knot, and looped it again, then tightened it, tugging with her left hand while holding the other end in her teeth. She stared at him with those lavender eyes so much like his son's, smiling all the while. There, she proclaimed when she was done, holding her hand out to him, the back near to his face. Do you give me your blessing? She asked when he didn't respond. He started to say he would, when Azudana moved her hand a bit, showing him what she meant. Zack leaned forward and kissed the back of her hand. Then she took his hand and similarly kissed it. Biancorso will win, the woman said. I will throw with the strength of Zaknafane.
Throw? He tried to ask, but barely a sound came out.
Rest, my new friend, she answered. Rest, and fight against the affliction. Sunset is soon, and the wane of magic will turn to wax. Hold strong, and we will win your fight soon after Biancorso wins its battles, I promise. She came forward more then, and pressed her lips against Zack's cheek. I promise, she said again.
and she crawled back out of the alcove. Thak closed his eyes and tried to focus his will, but it was harder now. He was glad for her promise, even if he didn't believe it.